Worth Repeating is made possible thanks to the support from the 80/20 Foundation, the Lifshutz Foundation, and Pasha Mediterranean Grill.
Some of the stories may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the Worth Repeating podcast. I'm Tori Poole. This is the second part of the live storytelling event recorded at the Irma and Emilio Nicolas Media Center at Texas Public Radio in downtown San Antonio. The theme was Startled. From shocking realizations to scary visitors, these stories are all about the moments that make you jolt. What was a realization that you came to that gave you a surprise? Our next storyteller is Angie Whitehead. Angie shares a story about a job that came with some ghosts that needed some attention. I think we all agree that ghosts need to chill with moving furniture.
So for about a year, I worked in a morgue. And I was a body removal tech. This meant that when someone passed away, we would get a call. And then myself, sometimes alone or with a partner, would go out and pick up the decedent, the person who passed away. When I took this job, no one in my life was surprised, not a single person. I'd always taken pretty unconventional paths in life, and I was also studying to be a mortician. So I also had no fear of the dead. I had no concern about being around the dead. And I had no thought, or I gave no energy to the idea of like ghosts and spirits, whatever you wanted to call it. But they insisted that I give them attention. So I worked in this very old building. It was about two stories. It was built in the late 1920s. And there were things that we all experienced together, such as like these large, heavy footsteps that would go up and down the stairs, disembodied voices that would tell you to lock up properly or clean up after yourself, but nothing particularly malevolent, just someone who just never clocked out. And then the footsteps started. Before that, though, the only people I knew who experienced, like, say, full-bodied apparitions were, surprisingly, my male coworkers. And they would tell me, they would say, you know, it's like you go and you drop someone off, you put them in the cooler, and then you go home and you turn around and they're standing behind you. Or when we go to the graveyard, you'll just see someone sitting by their grave. And I had to inform them that this was not a universal experience. This was uniquely them and them alone. But again, the footsteps started, and they were small footsteps. And so one day, I'm alone in the break room. My coworkers are out. I have my back to the door and one headphone in so I can hear the phone. When all of a sudden, these small footsteps come running down the hallway into the break room and stand right behind me. And I'm thinking someone came in from the front of the morgue instead of the garage, and they're trying to scare me. So I turn around and go, "What do you want?" And no one's there. I'm a full-time student. I'm working 10 to 12 hour shifts, and I have a few choices, and I decide to put up my hoodie, turn up my music, lay down and close my eyes. And these footsteps follow me around, specifically when I'm alone. And the disembodied voices aren't just sort of like a general do your job correctly. They're specifically trying to get my attention. "Hey, come here. Over here." I never went over. And then one night, it's me and two other coworkers. We worked overnights. Three women sitting in a break room. One is doing her homework. One's playing on her phone. I'm reading. And it's a slow night. There's not a whole lot going on. When all of a sudden, we hear wheeling from the public-facing side of the morgue. Now, again, this is overnight, so there should be no one there. All the lights are off. Two of us get up, we go check, only as far as the light goes, and there's no noise, there's no one. We go back in. We decide that if anything weird happens again, we pack our things up, we go sit outside in one of the vans. As if something hurt us, chairs start dragging across the floor. And that's when I remember that they had just rearranged the furniture out there. And I'm like, this can't be happening. I hear all the time that ghosts don't like when you rearrange things. This can't be happening. And then it's not just dragging the furniture, it's dragging the chairs and slamming them down. At this point, we're not doing this. We're throwing our things in our bag. My coworker who's doing our homework, I'm going, what are you doing? How much do you have left? Type faster, type faster. And then all of a sudden, something, bam, slams into the wall. All three of us scream bloody murder, grab our things, book it down the hallway, get in the van, and go sit out in the parking lot. We spent the next 2 weeks out in the parking lot. I'm no longer studying to be a mortician. And I am extremely cautious around graveyards.
This podcast is proudly supported by the 80/20 Foundation, dedicated to creating opportunities through education, community outreach, and meaningful impact. For this and more information, visit 8020foundation.com.
Our next storyteller is Gloria Quesada. Gloria shares a story about a cold-blooded family friend.
I'm First Nation. I'm a Diné. I am Talahumara and Mandan. I was raised with a tradition of animism, that everything has a spirit, and that we live in the world, the special world, where our grandmother is the moon, and the sun is our father, and we live on Mother Earth. My story starts out with my grandfather. His name was Manuel. He was born in 1902. And my grandmother, Guadalupe, was born in 1912. They lived on a ranch in Duval County, which is in a little place called La Rosita that was between Freer and San Diego. And on the property, there lived a very important snake. It was a blue indigo, a king snake. It's very important to this property. It had been there before they gotten there. If you know anything about a blue indigo snake, it is very large and black, and it has a range of 7 miles. And it's very important because it kills venomous snakes. So it clears the property of rattlesnakes. And that is the thing that's a problem there. Well, we had many encounters with this snake, but it decided to live in our hay barn. He grew to be, when I saw him, at least 7.5 feet long. And in our barn, we had a corrugated roof with 4 poles. And as we put hay in there, we would lift up higher and lower, depending on how much hay we had. On the weekends, I would go on the farm with my grandfather, and we would work on the corrals. And even though I was small, we all had chores that we had to do. That particular weekend, I remember that we vaccinated the cows and dipped them. And then my grandfather made sure that they were moved out to another pasture. And afterwards, I just went and sat in the shadiest place, which was the hay barn. My grandfather drove up on his truck after he had finished taking care of the cows. And he walked up to me and he says, "No te muevas, no te muevas. Mi amigo está aquí." And I looked at his face, And he wasn't sad or upset. He was smiling. And then I looked down, and the blue indigo was slivering right by my leg. He had the girth that was as big as my thigh. And I saw him take the corner of one of the bales of hay, and I saw a glimmer of iridescent purple and blue. And then on his underbelly, as he turned, was a little bit of salmon. And that was my encounter with the blue indigo. But several things happened when he lived in the barn, and he took care of our property and took care of all of us. If we had been Celtic people, they would have called the blue indigo a familiar. But he was truly to us a great spirit, a great protector of our land. He lived in the barn in the good seasons because he'd eat the vermin and the mice and any other snakes that came by. And he'd have his territory that he took care of. And that at a certain point, when things got very rough and dry, like it does here in South Texas, he would go and live under the ranch house. And there was a burrow under there that some other animal had made for him. But he was, what was interesting about him, he knew all the cycles of our weather and how things would change. So when my grandmother would walk outside to go get chicken eggs from the chicken coop, he would come out when he was hungry, and he'd follow her, and he'd slither through the sand and through the caliche and follow her. He would stay far enough away, but at one point, she knew that he was hungry and he had nothing else to eat. So she'd go into the chicken coop and pick out a couple of eggs and put them on the caliche road and then go about her business. So she would feed him, even though he was a wild animal. When my grandmother didn't get up soon enough and he was too hungry, he would just head out to that chicken coop and eat a chicken. He was really a very important, it was very, very important relationship between him and my grandfather. They saw each other all the time. And I don't believe that anybody ever got bit by a rattlesnake on our property because of that snake. I am a practicing shaman now, and I continue on with my lineage. And there have been several fire ceremonies that we've had, and the snake has returned. The blue indigo has come out of the fire and slithered around, but he always keeps his distance from me. I've seen him twice. I believe that he came back so I could remember my grandmother and grandfather, and so that I could, it could help me remember their love for the land and their love of the spirits of the land, and that know that in my bloodline, I carry a great protector, the blue indigo.
This episode is proudly supported by the Lifshutes Foundation, a San Antonio-based charitable foundation committed to strengthening communities through philanthropy and support for meaningful causes. For this and more information, visit directory.tpr.org.
Our last storyteller is John Tuttle. John shares a story about a summer camp that was a little bit more than advertised.
Before I begin, I'd like to real quickly state that the worst crimes committed in this story are petty theft and maybe tax evasion. And with that, we'll all be able to rest a little easier. When I was 15, I spent 2 weeks at a wrestling camp overnight in Pennsylvania. I was first recruited for the camp because this coach, he would go state to state during the beginning of the summer, pretty much advertising his camp for the second half of the summer. And so he had come to Texas and he had pulled me aside during the camp and he said, "Son, I see something special in you." And that's all I needed to hear. Somebody thought I was special. And so I told my dad, and apparently this coach had also told a couple other kids at the camp that he saw something in them. And so the parents had gotten together. You're ahead of me, sir. The parents had gotten together, and five of them, including my dad, had agreed to send us to this camp for 2 weeks as a group. And I realized that he probably used that "I see something in you" line on everybody when one of the kids coming with us was 6 years old. So we arrive at the airport in Pennsylvania, and the coach, he picks us up in a windowless white van, drives us an hour in some direction. Can't tell you, windowless van. And he gets us to his house in rural Pennsylvania, here's where I should describe the house. So behind the house was this building he had erected with a wrestling room. That's where the practices were. But then the rest of the camp was in his actual family home. And so he had taken a two-story suburban home and erected a drywall halfway through the house and hollowed out the back half of the house. So like if you had entered in through the front door, you would feel like this is a normal family home, but maybe this house isn't as big as you thought it would be from the outside. And that's because if you entered in through the back, you would enter a room completely hollow where he kept 33-tier bunk beds so he could house boys ages 5 to 18 throughout the summer. Petty theft and tax evasion, yeah. When we arrived at the camp, we were greeted by a 9-year-old boy who had a scar in the shape of a star on his face. So whether his nickname was Scarface or Starface was a massive source of confusion. And what Star Scarface told us upon us arriving was, yeah, pretty much this camp is everybody for themselves. Coach is crazy. Also, I may be 9, but I have smoked weed before. And then he did the little Snoop Dogg shuffle. As soon as we entered the house, they took our phones. And this was the first sign of, you know, what kids had been here before and who was new. Because all the kids who had been to one of these camps before had a second phone. Luckily for me, there was so much turnover with the counselors at this camp that come the second week, we had an entirely new staff. And I just told them I never brought my phone in the first place. The older kids, the kids who had been there before, they told us stories from the past. And my favorite one was that one time Coach had been driving them down the highway in the windowless van, and he pulled over to the side for a second and said, "All right, I need to nap. 10-minute power naps." And then he fell asleep. And since these were the kids who had been around, they had their phones to show us the evidence, the photos of him asleep at the wheel on the side of the road. I think the closest thing that happened to that during my stay was when we first arrived at the camp, he said he was gonna take all of us to a Pirates game. And then about halfway through the camp, he said he could only take half of us to a Pirates game, and we needed to organize ourselves into two equal lines of who wanted to go and who didn't. And then the morning of the Pirates game, he told us he can only take 3 of us to the Pirates game. So we picked a 16-year-old who also played baseball, was a diehard baseball fan, and then a 5-year-old and his 7-year-old brother who had never been to a baseball game before. And then a couple hours before the baseball game, he told us, "I can only take 1 of you, and you have to be able to drive because I don't feel like it." And just like that, our good gesture went down the trash. Instead, the 5 and 7-year-old stayed with us that night, and we watched the movie The Purge. You may find yourself wondering why would kids keep going to this camp? And it was a good camp, but also late at night, a couple kids knew that if you moved one of these refrigerators, there was a staircase that led to the attic. And within the attic was boxes full of training gear and merch for Penn State, Oklahoma, and Iowa State, which is amateur wrestling royalty. Those are the best programs. And these kids would loot him. The funniest thing is, before we went to bed every night, he would come out with a big thing of candy to sell us. And so after 6 hours of wrestling practice, it was the energy from the sugar and the candy that, you know, these kids used to rob him. He would also charge us to do laundry, which at an overnight wrestling camp is akin to biological warfare. And so it was known if you kept your laundry in certain places, his wife would just come in and do your laundry for you. She did all of my laundry. I never saw this woman once. On one of my, you know, second to last days of camp, he had actually, while I was taking a shower, he had come into the bathroom and started to urinate in the toilet next to the shower. And then he then conducted the exit interview. Petty theft and tax evasion. Learn a lot at camp? Yes. Have fun? Yes. Think you're going to come back next year? Probably. All right, I'm not going to flush so I don't freeze you out. And so on the last day of camp, out a couple hours before he was supposed to take us to the airport, he took us out to this U-Haul behind his house, opened it up, and inside of it was a bunch of very nice Olympic wrestling and training merch and prototype shoes that had never been released by Nike and New Balance. And then you know what he said to us? Well, you guys look, I'm going to go inside and take a 10-minute power nap. And then he proceeded to fall asleep for 30 minutes as those same kids robbed him again. But I would like to say, I was one of the good ones. I never took anything.
That's it for the Worth Repeating podcast. Do us a favor and give us a like, subscribe, or review us wherever you stream podcasts. Worth Repeating returns this fall. Do you have a theme suggestion? Want to join the storyboard and help shape the program that you hear? Maybe you just want to give us our flowers. I'd love to hear from you. Shoot me an email at worthrepeating@tpr.org. Support for Worth Repeating comes from the 80/20 Foundation, Lifshutz Foundation, and Pasha Mediterranean Grill. Worth Repeating is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Tori Poole. Thanks for listening.